You are listening to the Already Gone podcast, sharing stories of the missing, the murdered, the mysterious, and the lost. For the last 2 weeks, we've been discussing the unsolved murder of 17-year-old Holly Branigan in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Holly was stabbed to death in the kitchen of her family home on the same day that 100 miles west of Bethlehem, Three Mile Island was in the midst of its now infamous nuclear accident. Holly was a typical 17-year-old girl, a good student. Holly Branigan was involved in the Glee Club and managed the boys' soccer team. She had a part-time job to earn pocket money, working first at the local Holiday Inn and later taking a job at a mall. Holly's brother, Sean, a college student, was not a suspect in her murder. He'd been staying at a friend's house the night of the 28th, and the parents of his friend provided the alibi. Holly's father, Dick Branigan, an executive at Lone Star Concrete, was on his way to Atlantic City to attend a conference. He, too, has a solid alibi for the time of Holly's murder. We can also rule out two of Holly's closest friends, young women who went to school with her. They cooperated with police and had no injuries consistent with stabbing someone nearly 20 times. In September of 1979, Holly's brother Sean was fatally injured in an explosion at the service station he worked at. This is the Renner's Mobile Station on Schoenville Road. With my initial research complete, I was confident Sean's death was a terrible and tragic accident, but after this interview, I wasn't so sure. Today, we're talking with Philadelphia journalist Jim Friedman. Mr. Friedman grew up in Bethlehem. His older sister worked with Holly. And this interview starts with a look at the September 1979 death of Sean Branigan. Before we delve into the interview, I need to tell you about our sponsor, Blue Apron. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked dinners. Meals with flavorful, fresh ingredients like General Tso's chicken with bok choy and jasmine rice. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/alreadygone. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. That's blueapron.com/alreadygone. Blue Apron. A better way to cook.
In an explosion at his place of employment. And up until the very last time I spoke to Mr. Branigan, which was about a year prior to his death, he is positive that Sean was murdered. Even though I had spoken to the state police, the Pennsylvania State Police fire marshal did the investigation since this didn't happen in the Bethlehem city limits.
It was in Hanover.
It was in Hanover Township, yes, Lehigh County. The details were that Sean was cleaning the floor with gasoline when the doors were, bay doors were down. His friend Mark was outside. I believe I was told he was pumping gas to a customer while Sean was inside with the door down, cleaning the floor. And when he went to turn on the electric steam jenny, it caused a spark and an explosion happened. And Sean was seen climbing out a window on fire, and Mark had run over to help him and put the flames out. And his last words to Mark were, "Don't leave me, help me, don't leave me." In the days following, Sean was in the hospital. He was interviewed by police. The police were trying to get a deathbed confession from Sean since law enforcement labeled him as a suspect in Holly's murder.
Even though he had a solid alibi for that night in the parents of the person he was with.
Right, the Wellners. And the Wellners only lived a few streets away from the gas station. Mr. Brannigan believed that Sean was killed because Sean possibly spoke of going to the police about who he thought killed his sister. And in the time since Holly's murder and Sean's accident, it just made sense for Mr. Brannigan to believe that such a close proximity in time from these two incidents that Sean was set up to be killed. Police spoke to Mark Viola and Sean about that idea, and both of them said, you know, I had nothing, you know, I don't think my friend was going to kill me. And Mark said, I had nothing to do with this. This was an accident. The Pennsylvania State Police did at the time, an extraordinarily thorough investigation. They had taken this Team Jenny apart, screw by screw, bolt by bolt, and
to see if it had been tampered with.
Correct, but I don't even know if they did that to see if it was being tampered with or if that was just a thorough investigation by an outside agency.
Okay.
And they came upon the conclusion that back in 1979 that this was purely an accident because of a switch that was not... How did they put it? The power switch was old, and it had some loose connections, perhaps could have caused a spark and ignited the fumes of the gasoline. A couple of years ago, I spoke to the Pennsylvania State Police Public Information Office and filled out some right-to-know requests, because in Pennsylvania, if you want any public information, you have to fill out a right-to-know request. And the public information officer at the Pennsylvania State Police was extraordinarily helpful and said, just tell me what you're looking for. And I told him, I said, I'm working on a murder investigation, and the circumstances of the victim of this murder, there was an explosion that killed the victim's brother not long after the murder, and I'm trying to find out if these are somehow connected. That gave this public information officer a vested interest in this.
Right.
And thankfully, he opened up the file and had two other investigators in their cold case unit look this over in what took to be about 3 days. And he got back to me and said, we all kind of came to the conclusion that this was an accident. Even we looked over all the reports. There were very meticulous reports from the fire marshal at the time. And we'll still hold the fact that this is an accident.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. And then my friends and I, of course, got together to find out, well, you know, who did the Steam Jenny belong to?
Right.
Well, we come to find out that the owner of, it was Renner's, the last name was Renner, R-E-N-N-E-R, the owner did not own that Steam Jenny. He borrowed it from someone else. That, you know, this is the 6 degrees of the Holly Brannigan murder.
Right, because this is another rabbit hole.
But this is probably another very bizarre rabbit hole. This Steam Jenny may have been borrowed from a restaurant a half a block up from the gas station. This restaurant was a very popular restaurant in town.
Can we say the name of the restaurant?
Yeah.
King Chef.
I can't remember enough. King Chef. Thank you very much. Yes. King Chef's restaurant was right up the street from the gas station, or from Renner's, where Sean worked. And the owner of that restaurant had an untimely and mysterious death not long after Sean.
It was 85. See, I wrote all this down so that I would remember when I talk to you, so I have it in front of me. So I have an unfair advantage here. Tony Soriano was the
Soriano.
Gentleman.
Yeah. His son believes his father was murdered, even though the state police say he committed suicide. The coroner's report shows strychnine in his blood.
And a skull fracture.
Yes.
At the back of his head.
Right.
Which is a really good trick.
Yeah. And they still say, with both of those, they're saying that it's not suspicious. That Soriano's death is not suspicious, even though he has a bone or a skull fracture and strychnine in his blood. You know, like I said, these are the 6 degrees of the Holly Brannigan murder. Are any of these connected?
Maybe.
Maybe. I have no other choice to believe that they have to be connected. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but this Holly Brannigan's case is so different than any other cold case I've come across. Not that I have come across hundreds of them. I've come across maybe 40 or 50 where you can read these things and go, okay, you know what, it's just a matter of finding the smoking gun on this guy. Well, I've tried to find smoking guns on several suspects, and every time I do, like you said, it's another rabbit hole. It's another, oh my God, what happened to this guy? Oh, he got murdered here, or he got killed there, or this guy got, you know, it's just one thing after another. It's too many coincidences, too many ironic circumstances that happen.
So, for the listeners who don't have the notes that we have access to, Tony Soriano owned a restaurant called King Chef, and in August of 1985, on a Saturday, he drove out by, is it Indian Lake Park?
Yes.
Okay. In his station wagon. His car was found on Sunday with him behind the wheel with a severe head injury to the back of his head. People that were out to go fishing, I believe, came across him and called for medical assistance, and he was pronounced dead at the hospital, but he had a skull fracture and had consumed strychnine. The coroner ruled it a unknown causes and deferred to the investigating agency, the police department, to determine if it was foul play or not, and they were leaving it open-ended on the coroner's end. This is based on what was in, is it McCall? Is that the local paper?
The Morning Call.
Morning Call.
Yes.
Okay. Then the next day, I believe it was Monday, Tony Soriano's son drove out to Indian Lake to see where his father's body was found or the car was discovered and was run off the road into a telephone pole with his girlfriend in the car. So it just, the layers, you know, I don't want to be a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, what? I mean, it's just, and you trace it right back to Holly and Sean, if he's the one that loaned the shop cleaner to Renner's the day that Sean was sustained his fatal injuries.
Right. Sean was an educated, smart kid. He knows automotive technology. He knows how a gasoline engine works. He knows how volatile gasoline can be. Why would the doors be closed? Whose steam jenny was it? Was it purposely, designed to cause a spark, knowing that this was going to happen, and Mark was going to be outside? What else could have been done to that steam jenny to cause such an explosion? Because one of the theories was, well, if he poured a cup or two of gasoline on the floor, there's no way that small amount of gasoline would cause such a large amount of fumes to cause such an explosion. And I tend to agree with that. I totally tend to agree with it because I come from this kind of background myself. Did someone put gasoline in that?
In the power washer.
In the power washer?
Or
so
in the hose.
Turn this thing on?
Right.
Exactly. Now, would the state police, and I posed that question to the state police. I specifically asked them if any notes were taken as to the residue inside the steam jenny, and they said there was nothing left. Well, of course there was nothing left. It burnt the hell up. So if there was any hoses left that were filled with gasoline, at the time, even I don't even know if technology today could tell if there was gasoline inside that steam jenny or the hoses that could have caused that thing to explode as much as it did, because there were reports. In fact, a friend of mine told me years ago, he was walking in West Bethlehem. This was about a 2-mile straight line from Renner's gas station to where this, to where a friend of mine was in West Bethlehem. He heard that explosion, and then he started hearing fire trucks. And when he found out what had happened, he remembered exactly where he was when he heard that explosion. So this was not 2 cups of gasoline blowing up.
No.
Because of a spark.
Well, for the listeners, I just want to share an aside. I posted a newspaper photo that was taken minutes after the explosion. Someone had their camera and snapped a shot of it, where you can see the black clouds billowing above it. The fire department has not responded yet. It looked like a war zone. It was a massive explosion and fireball.
Yes. This was not an explosion caused by, you know, I'm going to say even a gallon of gasoline. And I'm not an expert in this type of situation, but I don't even think a gallon of gasoline would cause something like this. But you'll have people that'll scream, I'm wrong, and that's fine. But prove to me that this was not, the steam jenny was not tampered with. That's all.
Right, and there may not, like you said, there may not be enough left there to be able to prove it based on the heat of the fire. Did Mr. Branigan ever specifically say why he felt that it was a murder and not an accident?
The only thing that led him to believe that it was a murder was the fact that Sean told his dad, I'm telling people I know who did it and I'm going to the police. And Mr. Branigan said, Sean, you have to stop doing that. Do not do that. You're going to get yourself in trouble.
Okay.
Can't say that stuff. And on camera, he did say, he warned Sean not to say that. This could have been the reason why Sean died, as well as the reason why Mr. Branigan believes that Sean was murdered, to shut him up.
I know our focus is on who murdered Holly, but I feel like with Sean's death coming so soon on the heels that it's important to include his story in with hers. And this is a tragedy that this family endured, that Mr. Branigan ended up enduring by himself for many years, although I do understand that he did remarry. It was a good marriage, and that she had children from a previous relationship that he was involved with.
Yeah, yeah. All signs pointed to a very healthy, happy relationship with his second wife. I mean, she was an artist. She had a studio in the house. She was a very talented woman. Well, I mean, she still is. She's alive and well. Very friendly, very hospitable. When we went to talk to Mr. Branigan, she always was concerned if we had enough to drink and if we were cool or too hot or too cold, but kept to herself, you know.
Well, and back to Holly, I believe that you think this case is solvable, which is why we're talking. The mythical towel. I've read reports, I've seen rumors online that there was a towel found at the Branigan house after Holly's murder. Do you know anything about that? I know you talked about the knife that was tested for DNA, and that was a wash. There was nothing there. But is there this mythical towel, and can you talk a little bit about the not quite good enough for APHIS fingerprint?
Sure. I have to look back on when I first posted a video of a story that we did for NBC, because this is another strange story. Before the cold case unit was started, Bethlehem Police and I, detectives from Bethlehem Police and I would speak a lot about the Holly Branigan case. And at the time it was with Detective Sergeant Mark DeLuzio, who is now currently the chief of Bethlehem Police. Mark was the lead detective on the case, And at one point I had convinced him, you know, to we would like to do a story on Holly's case, and he agreed. So a reporter and I went over to Bethlehem Police, and they spoke to us candidly on camera, and Mark Peluzio had Officer Ross Nagel, who was in charge of the evidence room, to bring out the Holly Brannigan evidence. And in that evidence, I have video of Ross Nagel bringing out the knife, bringing out a bloody shirt, and I think a pair of bloody pants. And I remember asking, is there anything else? He said, no, this is all we've got. There was never a bloody towel.
That's a shame.
And years later, the current detective tells me, I don't know where that bloody towel thing came from. We have nothing like that. So I never saw the bloody towel. I don't know where the bloody towel came from. I don't know if that's another part of hearsay. I wish there was a bloody towel, but
yeah.
I've never seen it. Now, unfortunately, not connected to the bloody towel, at least as far as I know, Officer Ross Nagel was found in the wooded area of New Jersey not too long after our discussion with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head.
Oh, that's terrible.
So I don't understand why he would have committed suicide. His family does not understand why he would have committed suicide. Friends have no idea why he would have committed suicide. And through all the years I've known this guy, I have no idea why he would have done that, but he did have a strong interest in the Holly Brannigan case. This is another 6 degree of separation. As far as the towel goes, I don't know where that came from. You know, I don't know where the towel stuff came from, but it's interesting that you would ask that question as far as the evidence, because the only person that would have known about if there's a towel or if there's a missing towel would be Ross Nagel.
Okay.
I'm not insinuating or speculating that Ross Nagel had anything to do with this, but
no,
it's just a very unfortunate circumstance. Obviously, I didn't know what was going on in his private life, and neither did the chief at the time, because I spoke to him very, very, very off the record if he had any idea. And he's like, Jim, I just don't know why he would have done that. I don't know why he would have done that. It's just another one of these rabbit holes. In
right.
This case.
Terrible for his family. And
Yeah. The
fingerprint. Now, I understand, and I could be remembering wrong, so please help me here. There's a fingerprint that wasn't quite the caliber needed to be entered into AFIS.
Correct. I was told, quote, there is at least one fingerprint that we have not identified. And, of course, that sets off a lot of alarms. 15 years ago, when we initially did the first story on local news about Holly, they had mentioned that this fingerprint existed. And 10 years later, I had asked about this fingerprint to the new detective. And it had yet to be entered into a national database. Months later, I come to find out that it was in such poor quality that it didn't hold the criteria to be entered into AFIS. As far as I know, today, that fingerprint is still on a glass slide in a cabinet in evidence somewhere, still unidentified.
I would just be curious to know, and I did put in a call to Mark DeLuzio, and I have not heard back from him. There are ways to, for lack of a better term, beef up the quality of a fingerprint, and I would like to know if any of those have been pursued. As I talked about in the episode last week, Holly doesn't have any family. There is no one out there calling them and saying, you know, what's going on with this case? Where are we? Has this been done or that been done? I just can't help but wonder if there's something that can be done to help the print along to make it suitable for a database.
I could only imagine that in this day and age there is a way, although I have not seen that print. I don't know if it's a smear, a smudge, or something else. It could have been damaged from the transfer from the police officer that took that print. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, if there's something there still that hasn't been touched since 1979, there's still hope there somewhere.
That it can be brought out and retested. And even if it hasn't been tested since 2009, the technology is advancing so rapidly, I would like to think that maybe something that wouldn't have worked or wouldn't have been possible may work now or may be of benefit now. And hopefully the Bethlehem police would consider it or would pursue it.
Yeah. Mr. Brannigan was very adamant. He always told us, the media, I'm not going to answer any more questions. I just want the police to handle this. Every question since was, I just want the police to handle this. I don't want you to get involved, and I don't want to get involved. I just want the police to know everything they need to know. Let's let the police handle this. We've let the police handle this for 35 years. Not much has happened until the media gets involved. And when the media gets involved, tips are being collected, and phone calls are being made. And when the media gets involved, the cold case unit starts up, and then politics get involved. And then when the media gets involved, it gets on social media, and then that gets shared thousands and thousands of times. And then people in Detroit become interested and do podcasts on it. And that's wonderful, because you never know what will lead to solving a case, whether it's an hour old or 38 years old. These people can move to Detroit. The people from Bethlehem can move to anywhere they want to. And if they listen to a podcast, they'll go, oh my gosh, I remember this case. I remember seeing this certain thing happening that morning. I need to call the police.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I emphasize the fact that she was murdered on the day that Three Mile Island melted down, or came exceedingly close to melting down. That's a day that people remember. They may not remember March 24th, which was just another spring day in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. People remember that day, and that's the day that Holly Brannigan was murdered. Somebody like you is going to listen to it and say, hey, my mom went to high school in Bethlehem, and she's going to ask her mom about it, and her mom's going to say, Holly Brannigan, oh, I thought they solved that. It was this person. All the kids at the high school knew it was this person.
Right. That's, unfortunately, those conversations have been happening every 5 years or so since the murder. We in the media tend to focus on anniversaries.
Right.
You know, so it was 5 years ago today when so-and-so got killed. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years.
37 years.
So every 5 years, there's a Holly Brannigan blast. People go, oh my God, they still haven't solved it. Oh my God, I remember that case. Oh my God. And then they go about their day. I don't know if this case will ever get solved. And if it does, it will be based on circumstantial evidence. I don't see any other way this could be solved other than by circumstantial evidence.
Somebody needs to come forward.
The only way this will get solved is if someone listening comes forward with any type of information, no matter how small it is, it could really, truly break Holly's case. It really could.
Now, I know you've happened to run into him last week, but the name of the detective who's handling Holly's case?
Is Tom Galloway.
So if someone does have information about the case, they should contact the Bethlehem Police Department and ask for Tom Galloway.
Yes. Tom Galloway is the detective handling Holly Brannigan's case.
Is there anything else about Holly, about the case, about your pursuit of justice for Holly that you'd like to talk about that we haven't mentioned yet?
The only reason I have for pursuing a case like this, like Holly's, is she was, as far as I can tell, she was truly an innocent 17-year-old girl that was murdered, and the killer hasn't been found. That happens, unfortunately, every day in these United States, and why we're focusing on Holly has nothing to do with anyone else. It just has to do with finding someone who's been living their life like a normal person after doing something so horribly wrong to someone else and getting away with it. I can't give up on Holly's case just based on the fact that someone else that I could be standing in line with for concert tickets or going to a movie could be the person that killed somebody and is living their life with a smile on their face, going about their business and pretending nothing like this has ever happened to them. I only think of my own family that I would hope somebody out there, if something this unfortunate ever happened to me and my family, somebody out there would be working this hard to try and help figure out who did this to my family. So hopefully there's some compassionate people still out there and some people that would be willing to give up their neighbor. You know what I mean?
Well, and do the right thing. It's not too late to do the right thing in this case. And that also goes for the people that she went to high school with that maybe weren't as cooperative as they could have been. You know, again, I covered it, I think, in the first part of the story that these were kids with developing brains. Teenagers do not have a fully developed brain yet. And what they went through when their friend, their fellow student, coworker was murdered this way was traumatic. But if they know something or if they've heard something, they should not assume that the police know what they know.
Exactly. There's a family out there that has an enormous skeleton in their closet that knows something, and they're busting to tell somebody about it, but they're afraid. I know that. I know that they're out there. I know they're out there.
Well, and I can tell you that the reason that I was as led to this case was Marissa from the Vanished podcast. Someone that she knows asked her to cover it, and she doesn't cover murder. She covers missing persons. So she asked me to cover it. I literally had no idea what I was getting into, and the story is very deep and it's very wide. We have a victim that's very deserving of justice.
Yes, we do. And I can't thank you enough for putting in so much time and effort and interest in Holly's case.
Thank you.
I think if anybody from the Brannigan family were still around, they would thank you as well.
Thank you. That means a lot. And thank you for being so open with your information and your time and talking to me through our many technological challenges today.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
The release date for this episode is November 24th, 2016, Thanksgiving Day in the United States. I am very thankful to you, the listeners, for your feedback, reviews, and support of the show. I encourage you to check out our November sponsor, Blue Apron, by visiting blueapron.com/alreadygone. You can also support the show by subscribing on iTunes or your favorite podcast app and leave a 5-star review. This helps others discover the show and the cases covered here. Thanks to Foggy Star, Release NYC, Cassidy Rosa, Maddie Kerr, Pam Kate, Fishy Lawyer, Adam Icarus, and Bayesian Yardman for taking the time to review the show. As always, thank you to Luke Superior. He creates the music you hear each week. You can find Luke on SoundCloud. And again, thanks to you, the listeners. Be safe.